Happy New Year and welcome to the 14th episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. I'm actually recording this December the 30th, so it will be my New Year's episode. I wish all of you a happy and healthy and plant-based New Year. This episode, I feature Victoria Moran from Main Street Vegan. She is a very enthusiastic writer and vegan lifestyle coach. She was gracious enough to take time from her podcast to speak with me. She has several books out, the last one being Main Street Vegan, which is somewhat of a health how-to guide for the everyday Main Street person to become vegan and plant-based. She also is working on a new book that will be out soon that we'll look forward to purchasing. She, her podcast, she interviews a lot of animal activists as well as plant-based nutritionists and people from all walks of the vegan lifestyle. And she also has a vegan academy that people can go to New York City and work with her and do a workshop for a long weekend with numerous guest lecturers. So it's something that I would look forward to in the future. But, you know, nevertheless, she's a very, very enthusiastic advocate for animals in a vegan lifestyle. Today, before we get started, I wanted to talk a little bit about plant-based medical-related questions. One that's been coming up in my office a lot is what to do if you're on Coumadin or warfarin, which is a blood thinner. Many people, especially early on when people were told because Coumadin works through vitamin K and the clotting cycle to thin the blood, that you should avoid green leafy vegetables if you're taking Coumadin. And that was, it's in the package insert, it's the standard message given out by the hospitals. But the reality of it is that couldn't be more from the truth as far as being healthy. If you think about it, the people that need to take Coumadin need all the vitamins and antioxidants that they can get a hold of. So why limit a huge part of their diet by limiting green leafy vegetables and cruciferous vegetables? So we advocate in our office that it's not so much whether you eat them or not, but to eat them on a regular basis. So we encourage eating 3 to 4 servings of greens a day, but on a regular basis, not a day with greens and then skip 2 or 3 days. You will require most likely a higher Coumadin dosage, but you still get the blood thinning effects of Coumadin, but you're also getting all the phytonutrients, antioxidants, and vascular protective effects from green leafy vegetables. So if you're going to try this, make sure you tell your doctor that you're going to do it, and you know, have your INR checked within the first week of changing your diet. And you may need a couple weeks to get things settled in, but certainly, you know, we have lots of patients that are on or that, you know, eat green leafy vegetables and are on Coumadin and do just fine. For people that are on some of the newer anticoagulants such as Xarelto and Eliquis and Pradaxa, you don't have to worry about your diet as far as green leafy vegetables. A couple interesting things happened today in my office. One was my nurse was calling back a patient to discuss his lipid levels and to kind of relay a message from me to eat a more plant-based diet. Typically, we see people and talk about their diet in person. Then we call back with their labs and, you know, give them a few instructions and then follow up with them in the office. But I overheard her telling the patient, yes, nothing from an animal, no milk, no dairy, no oil. And I heard this and I thought, geez, no wonder, you know, anybody would probably ever listen. This is such a shock to some people. And it does take a while to get used to. And I think, you know, the more it seems that maybe smaller doses, a little bit at a time might be better to hear as opposed to these radical changes that people don't have any idea about what to do. You know, again, we're offering diet, new plant-based nutrition classes in the office, which I think will be a huge benefit as we increase the size and the number of these classes, to let people learn slowly what plant-based nutrition is and how to prepare the food and what it is. Another patient that was in the office today had really only tasted a few different vegetables. His fruit was limited to basically apples and bananas. Had no idea how to prepare any greens. Had never had, you know, any variety of squashes or zucchinis. He did eat eggplant, which was kind of interesting. But it shows you just how limited some people's diets are. And so when we tell them to eat a plant-based diet, it truly is a foreign thing. You know, they can go out and chicken is common, chicken breast, chicken wings, all this, that's fine with people. But when you start talking plants, their whole world narrows a lot of time. So it does take a whole lot of education to explain to people, you know, just all the giant possibilities that there are out there. And if people are computer or social media limited, it's even more difficult. So it was somewhat of an eye-opener for me today with those two patients. I also had the pleasure of having a patient that had listened to the podcast and decided to come in and visit. He's wintering down here. So it was very glad to meet with him. He's doing an excellent job at being a no added oil, plant-based kind of guy. He's doing quite well. So it's very encouraging that people are taking their health into their own hands and becoming plant-based and doing what they can to learn to become plant-based. His daughter's even taken the E. Cornell course. He's still having a little difficulty with his wife and his son. But hopefully they'll come around. So that was quite exciting. So we won't hesitate any further, and we'll get on with the interview with Victoria Moran. Well, welcome, Victoria Moran. Thank you so much for taking time to speak with me this afternoon. How's things in New York?
You know, I love this city so much. I'm an adopted New Yorker, so I picked this place, and I think it's always pretty good, even in the winter, although better when it's not winter.
But it's a beautiful time of year to be in the city there, though, isn't it?
It is. It really is. I saw the Rockefeller Center Christmas tree, and it's this great, big, giant tree, and on the one hand, it was so beautiful with all the lights and everything. But on the other hand, I don't know if this is just that I have eaten a vegan diet for 30 years and I try to be a thoughtful person. I just thought, I wish they hadn't cut that tree down. I wish it was still growing out in the woods. So I think kind of the way we live and eat changes us a little bit for the good, I hope.
Yes, when I was in first grade, they gave us little seedlings to plant, and I'm originally from West Virginia, and I planted that seedling at my grandmother's house, and she's gone, and the house has been sold, but when I go up there to visit, I drive by that pine tree, and it must be 40 feet tall now. You know, I guess that tells you how old I am, but it's so beautiful to see, and every time I go, I actually go, and I take a picture, you know, and there's my tree. And on the top of it would be a perfect Christmas tree. But then again, like I said, it's so wonderful to go visit my tree.
It is pretty special. I remember Christmas time. Oh gosh, I was 15, and I had a pen pal, my Beatles fan club pen pal, who lived in Washington D.C. and seemed very sophisticated to me. And she sent me for Christmas a little card that said, a tree has been planted in your name in Israel. And I do not remember any other thing I got when I was 15, 16, 17, 35. I don't know. It's just stuff. But I will always remember my tree. And there's just something about life and the wonder of life. And as somebody said to me once a long time ago, nobody knows what life is. So to just hold that sacred is pretty special.
You know, that's a pretty good Christmas gift idea, since we're in the season, to give somebody a tree.
Yeah.
I just might do that. Well, getting on with this podcast, or what we're here to talk about, you are a longtime vegan and a vegan lifestyle coach and an author of many books. I have read Main Street Vegan. And tell me, and you also started, your path kind of started two ways, both with some religious studies and being a vegan and being a London, Great Britain traveler, and they all converged, so to speak. Is that how it kind of went?
You know, everybody has their story, and certainly everybody who eats in this kind of different drummer dining style has a story. You know, for me, I'd always loved animals, and I had tried to be vegetarian when I was 13. It didn't last very long, but I always knew it was in there. That was something I wanted to be once I figured it out. But I also had a long-standing issue with food and weight. I was what I know now is a compulsive overeater. At the time, I thought I was just fat and needed to go on another diet. So all those things were happening, and I did start studying nutrition pretty young. My dad was a physician and actually kind of devolved into being a diet doctor. And so while I was being put on these ridiculous diets, I was also reading some of his old medical school textbooks and really trying to figure out how to fix me. So in my case, I needed to be fixed from the inside first, because I really did have an emotional, spiritual deficit that I was trying to fill with food. So I treated that just like an alcoholic would. I went and got myself recovery, and I am grateful to this day. And once I was to the point where I could make choices about what to eat, I chose vegan. I'd wanted to be vegan for a long time, but it's pretty hard to be a vegan and a binge eater, especially back in those days before we had all the vegan junk food that is available now. And so in 1983, I made the switch, and it has served me very well, and I feel really fortunate.
Fantastic. And tell me, how did you become a lifestyle coach, or what led to that?
Well, I've always been a writer. I know how to do words. I write, I speak. This is what I was good at when I was a kid in elementary school. It's how I've always made my living. I started writing for magazines when I was 14, not health stuff at that time. I was actually writing for rock group magazines. And I met the Beatles and all the other rock groups of that era. And so I've always done words. And about 10 years ago, I started seeing the writing on the wall with publishing and the internet, and how things were just not quite what they had always been for books and authors. And I thought maybe I needed to look into, you know, a little something on the side. So first I thought I would be a life coach, because not all my books are about health or veganism. My actually biggest selling book is called Creating a Charmed Life. So I've written a lot of spirituality and self-help and that kind of thing. And I thought, well, you know, that's a good background for being a life coach. And my academic background was in religious studies. So I thought, I can do this. And I asked all my friends, do you think I should be a life coach? And they said, no, no, you don't have the personality. And I was kind of insulted. It's like, just tell me what I can do. And so I took this big training to be a life coach, and I actually practiced that for a few years and did fairly well at it, but I didn't like it. I just didn't like it at all, because I'm not a one-on-one kind of person in particular. I do better with groups and audiences, but I did have that training and that experience. And then I thought, well, you know, maybe if I train to be a holistic health coach, maybe that's what I want to do more than being a life coach. So I went back to school and got another certification in holistic health counseling, and I did like that a whole lot better. But by then, Main Street Vegan, the book was in the works, and then it just hit me. There need to be vegan lifestyle coaches. There need to be people trained to help other people to go vegan, because people have different concerns, different issues, lots of social things going on, you know, the husband is and the wife isn't, or whatever it is. And so I founded Main Street Vegan Academy, which trains vegan lifestyle coaches and educators. And I do maintain a small private practice myself, but primarily I write and speak and run the academy, and it's a really good life.
And so the graduates of your course, I listen to your podcast, seem to be from all walks of life and may just incorporate the vegan lifestyle coaching into what they're already doing. Or what do your students hope to accomplish?
Oh, sure. Well, it's different for everybody. I mean, what we have, it's a 6-day intensive in New York City. So I want to be very clear, this is not Harvard, and we're certainly not training people to be nutritionists or do anything to work with people who have pathology. They know that, and they're clear about that with their clients. What they're trained to do is help people go vegan or help vegans thrive at being vegan. Now, all that said, they've come from all over. We've had people from 8 countries. Our farthest away people were Australia and South Africa, and from all over North America as well. A lot of them are people who are doing something where they're working with individuals already. So we've had quite a few yoga teachers. We've had a couple image consultants. We've had professional people. One medical doctor has gone through the program, a couple of RNs, 2 registered dietitians. And some people are just coming out of the corporate world. Either they were downsized or they took early retirement, and they want to do something in this next phase of their life that really helps the world, that's really a heart connection for them. Then we have some food people. We have some private chefs. We have a young woman who started an ice cream, a vegan ice cream company in Toronto. We have a woman who started a cowboy boot company in Dallas, Kick Butt Boots. So they're doing all kinds of things with the certification. JL Fields, she has a very popular blog called JL Goes Vegan, and she's actually taken her vegan lifestyle coaching background into the corporate world. So she's doing a lot with wellness programs for corporations, and she's doing some spokesperson work for some compatible companies. So even though a lot of people do it just a little bit on the side, or they add it to their yoga teaching or what they're already doing, some of them have actually made full-time careers out of it. It's pretty exciting.
Yeah, I'm very interested in, I may eventually be one of your students, I think.
Oh, you could be our second medical doctor.
Yeah, it'd be, anything to get to New York City and to take a vegan lifestyle course eat at vegan restaurants in New York City. It sounds like a win-win deal all around.
Well, it's very, very cool. I feel so grateful just to get to go through the course every time we do it, which is 5 times in 2015 we'll be having the program. The instructors are so marvelous, and your listeners who listen to your podcast and other podcasts and who follow these people on Facebook and Twitter and read their books know that some of the people in our movement, they're so bright, they're so charismatic, and they can communicate these ideas in ways that are just so exciting. So some of the people who are with the Academy, we have John Joseph, who's the lead singer for a punk band that some people have heard of called the Cro-Mags. And he tells his story. He grew up on the mean streets of Queens. This guy was incarcerated. He's been shot. He's been stabbed. And he was actually saved by yoga and vegetarianism, which led into veganism. He's now an author. He's an Iron Man. Just incredible human being. The gentleman who teaches our marketing class was tapped by the Shark Tank TV show to write Shark Tank Jumpstart Your Business. So we really get wonderful, wonderful instructors, all vegan, of course. And then kind of the frosting on the carrot cake is that we take field trips, because New York City is kind of Disneyland for vegans. So in addition to some lunches out, some optional dinners out, we go shopping. There's a boutique here, Vogue Couture, because wool is a problem for ethical vegans, as of course is for certainly and Dowd. And so this lovely young designer, Leanne Hilgard, has come up with these fabulous eco-friendly fabrics, and her coats are made here in New York City in the Garment District. We go there. We go to Moose Shoes, which is a vegan shoe, boot, belt, wallet, handbag store, Obsessive Compulsive Cosmetics, cruelty-free, non-toxic makeup. We go to High Vibe, which is a raw food and detox market. So we really, really have fun, and people have an experience. And so often people say to me, you should put it online. And it's like, no, that would be like saying, put your honeymoon online. No, you want to take your honeymoon for real, because you're going to remember that forever. And people remember this forever, I'm very proud to say.
Yeah, it sounds wonderful. And I think, you know, I mean, it's a great way to promote veganism. You know, I recently read a study, I'm blocking on the name of the group now, but they looked at the number of vegans in the United States, vegan vegetarians, as well as former vegans, you know, then people that aren't or never have been. And I can't read my own writing here. Human Research Council, or Humane Research Council, the study was from. And, you know, they say of the United States, they pulled 11,000 people. They said 2,000 of the current, of the population that they pulled, 2,000 were current vegans or vegetarians, 10% former, 88% never. You know, it seemed, you know, one thing that came out of it positive, where they said, well, 37% of them said they'd like to try it again, and the failures were mainly because they either didn't identify with veganism, or they changed too fast, and they kind of fell off the proverbial wagon. So, I mean, I thought that was, you know, I mean, if all those people converted back, then that would be fantastic. On the other hand, it seems like, you know, this way of eating, living has been around so long, it seems to just stall out at a small percentage, despite all these great things. I mean,
I think we've grown a lot, though, even with those numbers. And there are some better numbers. There was a Roper poll done by the Vegetarian Research Group a couple of years ago that showed that our numbers had doubled in 3 years' time. So I think we're doing well. And you can see that perhaps not 100% full-time vegans, but enough people are moving in this direction that there's all this food for us at airports and regular restaurants and places that just, it wasn't there 10 years ago, much less 30 years ago. The idea that you can walk into any grocery store and buy soy milk, almond milk, coconut milk, I mean, unbelievable. I mean, when I became vegan, you could order soy powder in a clear plastic bag from a guy in Ohio. And we all did it just trusting it was soy powder and not talcum powder. I mean, we didn't know. It came in, you know, an unmarked plastic bag. So I think things really, really are picking up. But I completely agree with you, and I think that study was very sobering in the recidivism problem, that so many people go back. And my own opinion is that it is almost always for social reasons. And people will tell you sometimes it's something else. They'll say, well, I got tired, or I just didn't feel right, or, you know, whatever. I had cravings. That'll come up a lot of the time. But if you really keep looking, there is usually a new boyfriend in there somewhere. Or you've got somebody really isolated, they're the only vegan in their circle, maybe the only vegan in their town, maybe the only vegan they've ever met. And so one thing that's great these days is the internet, that you can really get a community just on Facebook and with blogs so that you feel supported. Ideally, it's better to be supported by real three-dimensional people that you can actually see, but you've got to get some kind of support somewhere, because otherwise you just feel like you're doing some weird, odd thing, and then when your mother says, that's okay, honey, it's just a phase you're going through, you can start to think, well, you know, maybe it is. But what's so important is to know it's not a phase, and it's not a diet. Just this morning, and here in New York City, we can get almost everything, And I walked into a little bakery because I wanted some kind of whole grain roll to have with my lunch today. And I walked into one that I had heard, you know, had some vegan, so they had nothing vegan. So I went into another place, and they did have just some plain, you know, whole grain kind of baguettes. And I had said in the first place, I heard you had something that's vegan, and they said, no, but we have gluten-free. And that's fine, and I understand that some people need to be gluten-free, and God bless them that there's stuff out there available to accommodate that. But to me, being vegan is not just, oh, on this diet, I don't eat some stuff. This is a commitment to health and reverence for life and the sustainability of the planet. I mean, this is huge. It's not a diet. A diet is something you go off of.
Yes, I agree. In my world, you know, I'm a cardiologist, and people come to me because they have heart disease or other, you know, diabetes, hypertension, you know, things aren't going well when they get here. And the last thing that they really expect to hear from me is, well, you should be, you know, and I temper it in the office plant-based, because if I want, it's bad enough if I say plant-based to get them to, not to turn around and run out the door. But if I mention, you know, vegan the first visit, then, you know, and they may say, are you a vegan? And I'll say, yes. And then I talk about, you know, but then I shift it back around to the nutrition aspect of it, because they get so, one, they weren't planning on changing when they came in the door. They were planning on either being told that they're going to be okay, or take this pill and you're going to be okay, or we'll do this and you'll be okay, but never that I really have to change what I'm doing to be okay. And, you know, so, but one thing that does come up quite a bit is, well, none of our friends will have us over. We won't be able to ever go out again. You know, and then of course the spouse situation, is often an issue. So, I mean, I find it, you know, I've listened to Dr. McDougall and, you know, Dr. Esselstyn, and, you know, I hear their different ways that they approach, and Dr. Furman, and I hear your different, you know, the approach, and, you know, depending on what day it is and what time of the day is how I kind of go about it, it seems like, but, It is very difficult, and I think we, you know, I kind of made mention this of on our you know, little email back and forth, but I think both camps need each other. You know, I think the plant-based people, I think people are more likely to stay plant-based if there is an ethical tie as well.
I believe that 100%, because if you've been very, very ill, you know, it's always, well, if you've already had a bypass surgery, you're not going to stray. Well, we've all heard Bill Clinton say he's strayed and he had bypass surgery. So if somebody who's really, really got his life depending on it can not be 100% with it, think about somebody who just decided to do it because it sounded like a good idea, or they read something in a magazine. I mean, it's no wonder there's such a recidivism rate. But I think what happens is once people get excited about this for any reason, and there's no bad reason for doing this, once they're in, then I think it's really important for them to come to see all of it. You know, some people get in it just for animals, and they don't care about their health at all, and they're eating all kinds of junk food. And what I say to them is, you're not helping the animals one bit, because if you're pale and sickly or you gain a lot of weight, people are not going to say, yeah, let me do what you're doing. If you really want to help the animals, you want to be all bright and vibrant and look young and have energy. So people will say, well, gosh, I've never thought much about animals, but I sure want your energy and your complexion and your figure.
Yeah, I think that, yeah, that is very much, very much true. You live, and your husband, you know, as I listen to your podcast, you know, it's funny about podcasts. I don't know if you listen to any of them, but you kind of feel like people are become your virtual friends, or you know a good bit about their family, more so than a lot of acquaintances probably. But your husband was not initially vegan, and he has pretty much got there now. How in the beginning, you know, how was, I guess he knew you were vegan, so he kind of decided to put up with you anyway.
Right. But you know, I was widowed in my 30s, and so I'd been single. By the time I met William, my current husband, I had been single for 9 years, and really thought, you know, I'm never going to get married again. I mean, I'll go out and I'll have a good time, but, you know, it's not going to happen. And I had tried to date vegetarians, and I was living in Kansas City, Missouri at that time. There weren't a huge number of vegetarians there then, although it's become a fabulous vegan town these days. It's got all kinds of restaurants and a vegan coffee house and a vegan meal delivery service. It wasn't like that back in the mid-90s. And so I thought, well, why don't you just do something revolutionary and maybe go out with somebody just normal? And so I met my husband through an ad that he had run. We just missed internet dating, so this was an ad in a newspaper. And he was nice. And he was respectful of my being vegan. And so the first 2 weeks that we went out, we only went to ethnic restaurants. And he would eat Italian or Mexican or Chinese, because it's so easy to eat, you know, vegan in any of those kinds of places. And then after 2 weeks, when it was looking like it might get serious, he took me to a sports bar and he ordered a great big steak. I thought, I don't think this is going to work out. So I was polite. And the next morning he called and said, I've been thinking. And I thought, well, I've been thinking too, Buster. I've been thinking this is not going to work. But he said, I've been thinking. I'm not going to eat meat anymore. So he went vegetarian really, really early. Now, the eggs and the dairy, you know, to him, it was just like, that doesn't kill anybody. I'm not going that far. But then a few years into our marriage, we went to a farm sanctuary benefit, and there was a little tiny the video that they showed about a cow and calf being separated and the tremendous suffering that brought to both of them. And he leaned over at this big fancy dinner and just whispered into my ear, do you think you could get me some more of that soy milk or almond milk like you drink? And I just said very nonchalantly, oh, sure, when inside I was going, yay! So sometimes you have to wait a little while. But, you know, the thing of it is, I think we can always kind of have mutual respect and allow people to be where they are, because just because I married somebody who was not a vegan did not mean that I was not going to be vegan. And I think where it runs into trouble in relationships is when people feel like they have to be just alike. And this is a commitment. This is a conviction. This is how I intend to live my life, regardless of who is in my life, where I live, what's going on. This is a bottom line commitment. And I think from the health point of view, that's a very good thing, because even though if my only commitment is I'm just not going to eat animal products, I still have to make decisions. I have to make decisions to not eat a lot of fat and a lot of sugar and you know, things that would not be good for my health. But if I even just have that bottom line about the animal foods, that's going to help me to an extent, and then I'm going to feel so good about myself. I'm going to want to do the other things and get enough sleep and get exercise and all these things that we know we ought to be doing, but a lot of people aren't.
Yeah, I think it helps to declare it. I the first time I read John Robbins' A Diet for New America, and as I've said multiple times on this podcast, and I was like overnight, you know, and I was always an animal lover too, but I also grew up around, you know, butchering and that kind of stuff in West Virginia. So I didn't put the two together. I mean, I hunted as a child, and but that the light bulb came on when I read that book, and it's like, okay, I'm vegan, it's over, you know. And but I didn't want to make a scene about it. I wanted to, like, I'm not going to be one of those people at the restaurant that, you know, has to order everything off the menu and can you hold this and do that and do that, and I can't do that. And I'm not going to go to your house and say that I'm this way. I'll just eat what you have, and, you know, we can just, of course, on the other side of the coin, I also wanted to tell everybody, this is what you should do too. But I did fall off the wagon because I really didn't declare it, you know, okay, you know, I'm just not going to do it. And it wasn't until the second time around when I was like, okay, this is the way it is. You know, the household is going to be vegan. And luckily, you know, my daughter was of the opinion, okay. And my parents, I kind of had the upper edge. My parents were both sick and I was doing the cooking. So, you know, I had a little bit of an edge as far as convincing everybody. But I think it does help to, you know, to say it's okay to say, okay, this is the way I'm going to eat. You know, I don't expect you to necessarily, or I respect you, but, you know, but please respect my wishes, whether it be for animals or health or whatever. And then on the other hand, it seems like people, they become, you know, that you may say that to, they become a little bit defensive and they start, you know, maybe prosecuting you a little bit. Well, do you do this? What do you do that? Well, I heard you can't eat this, or I heard you can't do that. And, you know, I think that makes things uncomfortable a little bit.
It does. And I think that's why it's so important to have support from somewhere. If you don't know anybody that you can talk to after you've been grilled by your brother-in-law, that's really, really hard. But if you know that, say, it's Thanksgiving or sometime when families get together and you call your vegan friend in Cleveland and he got the same kind of grilling that you got, you know, it's just good. It's just better to know that you can share. And the other thing that I really believe is that the people that are sometimes the nastiest about it are the ones who really at some place within them feel like they ought to be doing it. Because people who are just happy doing what they're doing and they're perfectly content with the way they eat and the way they look at life, they're going to just say, okay, you know, you're a vegan and somebody else is a Presbyterian and, you know, it's nothing to me. It's those people who think that it's really right. I mean, my husband had an experience. I put this on Facebook and had never had as many Facebook comments as this, but he went up to a little bar and grill in the neighborhood and was sitting at the bar having a glass of wine, minding his own business. And the bartender asked what we were going to do for Thanksgiving. And he said, well, you know, we have a little bit different Thanksgiving dinner because we're vegan and we're going to have these people over and do this, blah, blah, blah. And a guy at the end of the bar heard this statement and he started saying, well, you know, as a vegan, you can't get all the nutrients you need. And he's just, you know, and my husband's like, no, you know, we know about that. And my wife has studied a lot and we're good on all that. And finally, when the guy just couldn't take it anymore, he said, well, you're just no better than Hitler. Hitler was a vegetarian, you know. Well, he wasn't. That's a myth. He wanted to give the impression that he was vegetarian because he was into, you know, the super race and all that and felt that it made him look superior. But there's documentation that he ate lots of sausages from the butcher shops in Munich. But my husband had just reached the end of his rope. You know, he's a very nice guy, very unassuming, very respectful of others. But when this comment came out, he raised his voice, which, I mean, I wish I'd been there because I've never heard him do anything like this in public. And he just said to this man, do not ever compare me to someone who killed 6 million people and who, by the way, was not even a vegetarian. And everybody in the restaurant got really quiet and still, and I was so proud of him but my thought is, when I think about the guy in the bar, it's like, that guy's going to end up being a vegan someday, I'll bet. Because otherwise, it wouldn't be that important to him to argue about.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I've heard you say that, and I do take solace in that, you know, it's like when people do get on you, it's like, well, you're close. I also liked in your book, Main Street Vegan, your quote with Jay Dinshaw is, you know, the way of life is about doing the most good and the least harm you can do in any given instance. You know, I think we're all in evolution with, you know, our diets. And I try to remember it. I dreadfully want my patients to go, you know, 100% over the day I talk to them. But, you know, if we all do the best we can every day, and if something slips in, you know, go ahead the next day and try to make it a little better if you can, just like everything else.
That's just it. And this is why when we train the coaches at Main Street Vegan Academy, we call them vegan lifestyle coaches and educators, because it really is about a whole lifestyle change. And I know up here in New York City in the Bronx, Dr. Robert Ostfeld has the plant-based wellness program in the cardiology department there. And even though he doesn't get paid for this, in fact, the whole program has to be supported by donations, but they do a free program once a month on a Saturday where all the cardiac patients who are interested in changing their diet come and get lectures, and one of the patients who's been doing this for a while successfully also speaks. There's a cooking class, and then they all get to have this wonderful low-fat, all-vegan lunch. And they can bring their spouse or, you know, whoever they live with to kind of get it as more of a family. This is an evolution in our lives. It's not just like the old, oh, here's a diet, eat this, which nobody ever did anyway.
Yeah, that would be great. I'm doing a wellness class in the office, and just me for now. That, you know, it's kind of a group class. We go over menus and, you know, how you deal with cooking two meals if you need to, and where to shop for this and how to substitute that. And people have been very receptive. Even a couple, you know, the person that was the most worried on my, you know, discussing with her, you know, about they'll never have any friends, you know, has taken the class and, you know, has enjoyed it and is really trying. And, you know, one thing I said to her is like, well, are your friends healthy? And she said, well, no. And I was like, do they take medicines? And she said, yes. And I said, well, maybe you could help them.
Exactly. And people are accommodating. Something that I learned growing up Catholic but going to public schools was that this was the days when Catholics didn't eat meat on Friday. And my friend's parents were always so up on that and so aware of when I came over on Friday what they were going to feed me. And the fact was, I would have cheated. I didn't care. But they cared. And I raised my daughter vegan. She's grown up now. And just remembering back, we didn't have any vegan friends locally. We had some vegetarian friends locally, and that was great. And a lot of the people that we were around at that time were interested in eating healthy and natural foods. You know, you could show them a piece of tofu, and they wouldn't go catatonic on you. But watching her social relations, it was very obvious that people accommodated her. And it wasn't all that difficult. And I think we have this idea, oh, I don't want to put anybody out. Well, you're not. You just say, oh, this is so great. I can hardly wait to come over and see you. Now we're eating this plant-based diet these days. So what can I bring? Would be happy to bring, you know, a couple of dishes to share. I just, you know, I think so much is about wanting everybody to like us. But if we die prematurely, that's going to hurt our friends a lot more than if we ask them to make some mashed potatoes without the butter and the milk.
That's a very, very good point. Yeah, I also think that, you know, I said, well, tell them, you know, it's like, well, it's going to hurt your kidneys if you eat this, you know, and you do have kidney problems, and the high protein is not good for your kidneys. I said, would she be offended if she knew that, you know, eating that would hurt your kidneys? Well, of course not. And it's like, well, then she's not going to worry about anything else either, you know. So I do think it's, and maybe a lot of it is too, just not wanting to admit it, or, you know, I guess maybe even recognize that there is a problem that I need to change my way of eating. You know, I that may be part of it.
And I think that there's something about what's normal and what's natural and what's right. And what's normal and natural and right to almost any human is what we grew up on, because we learn what's normal before we even learn to talk. We get the idea of this is how we do things. And I think we all have these ideas. I mean, every once in a while, I'll catch myself. Somebody will say something or do something, and I'll just be affronted. And it's like, and I'll say to my husband sometimes, can you believe that they said that or they did that? And he's like, well, yeah, you know, some people do that. And I'm just all on my high horse about it. But if I really look, it's like, you know what? Your mother or your grandmother was really big on that. I know one. This doesn't have anything to do with being vegan. My grandmother was just adamant about you have to turn the lights off when you leave a room. Well, my husband's mother didn't get that message. And he and his children, they'll not only leave a room and leave the lights on, they'll leave the house and leave the lights on. And I'm just like, how can? And it's like, well, this is how they can. This is how they do it. This is how they always did it. None of my business. And I think when you have to change something because it's important, either because it's morally important to you or because your health depends on it or you don't want your health to have to depend on it, people will respect that. They've just got to get it. You're doing something different. It doesn't mean you don't love them. It just means you're trying to make a positive choice in your life. And sometimes there might be one or two people in your life who are just so stodgy or so hateful about it that, you know, you may just not see so much of them over time. But most people will be wonderful. And my mom, bless her heart, she put up with all this with me because I went vegetarian at 19. And she said to me shortly before she died in her late 80s, she said, you know, we used to think you were crazy. Eating that, doing that yoga and eating those beans. But now people's doctors tell them to do that. And I thought, well, after all these years, I have been vindicated by my mother's internist.
You know, and it's funny when you say it that way, because, you know, I also listen to the podcast, and I listen to it either when I'm usually driving or running. And there's a fair amount of doctor bashing in the vegan community. And it's, you know, and I understand because I, you know, in my community, I am the only vegan doctor. And, you know, I am the only one that'll sit down and I'll tell people, it's like, you know, I could have been out of this room 45 minutes ago if I, you know, hadn't talked, you know, plant-based to you and just gave you a pill. But, you know, I think that, you know, a lot of people, you know, the vegan, I know they expect more out of us. You know, and I do feel bad, you know, when the light bulb finally went on, you know, and I thought, you know, first I thought myself, you know, this is what I want to do, and animals, and of course it's not healthy. But then, you know, after, especially forks after over knives, it's like, oh, this is just in Dr. Ornish, you know, I said, this is the way it has to be. But, you know, I think there's, you know, we don't have that much education, very little education in nutrition. It's mainly an intensive care nutrition, which is fraught with, you know, misconceptions as well. But, you know, there is a lot more that we need to do, and there's a lot that we need to be educated on as far as so far, you know, spreading the word. But, you know, it is funny when you say, well, you know, the doctor vindicated you, but for the most part, the doctor is that, you know, well, my doctor never told me to do that, or nobody else ever told me to do that.
Well, it's so interesting because most of the doctors aren't doing it themselves. I had the guys from Cowspiracy on my podcast recently, the wonderful documentary about why the big environmental organizations aren't talking about intensive animal agriculture as being the number one contributor to environmental destruction. They're just going along like, well, you know, take short showers and turn your lights off. I already did that. And everything will be okay. And they were saying the same thing. They were saying that these people in power in these organizations eat these foods and like these foods, and they can't very well tell somebody else to stop. It's like this wonderful story of Mahatma Gandhi, that this mother walked like miles and miles and miles for days with her little boy to meet Mahatma Gandhi and ask him this question. And when they finally got to where he was, the mother said, oh, Mahatma, please tell my little boy to not eat so much sugar. And Gandhi said, come back tomorrow. And here is this mother exhausted, and I'm sure they were poor, and it was a problem to find a place to stay, but she did and came back the next day. And the next day, Gandhi says to the little boy, son, I want you to not eat so much sugar. And the mother is like, thank you, I know coming from you, it's really going to work. She said, I just have to ask, why did we have to come back today? And Gandhi said, because, ma'am, I had to stop eating sugar. He had so much integrity. He couldn't tell somebody to do something, you know, what something that he was already doing. And I think that's so true with physicians. I mean, in cardiology, you guys are certainly ahead of the game. I think we've got more vegan cardiologists than any other specialty. I mean, obviously, because the plant-based diet has been shown to be near miraculous with cardiovascular issues. And, you know, people are coming on board. Are you part of VegDocs?
Yes, I am listed.
Well, every time I go there, there are more doctors.
Not enough,
but it keeps growing.
Yeah, it's funny. In our local hospital doctor lounge, it is the usual breakfast of eggs and bacon and all this terrible, terrible stuff that I've even taken pictures of and used for a list. And one day, a surgeon came in. It's like a bar joke. A surgeon, an oncologist, and a cardiologist were sitting in the doctor's lounge, and the surgeon asked what I thought of the Atkins diet, and my nurse was with me, and she's like, you know, she knew that I was just going to blow, and I just went off and, you know, spilled out the whole, you know, plant-based, you know, lecture to them, you know, before they could even take a breath, which probably wasn't the best way to go about it, but nevertheless, it just all came flowing out. The oncologist ran for the door. The cardiologist said at first, well, if we cure them all with diet, then what will we do? And, you know, and somewhat in jest, I mean, really in jest. And, you know, the surgeon's like, well, he actually came to me like afterwards out in the parking lot and said, you know, when I'm done with the Atkins diet, I think I'll talk to you about this more. And it's like, you know, it'd be great. But ironically, the next day, the cardiologist came back in and he said, what about this China study book? And I told him, and he's actually reading it. And he, you know, yesterday I actually came into the doctor's lounge and he had a big bowl of fruit. And he said, see, look what I'm doing. He said, I'm trying.
Oh, that's wonderful.
You know, so yeah. It does, you know, eventually, you know, okay, but I am the local nutty cardiologist as far as that goes.
Well, your locality is lucky to have you.
So, but it is interesting. And, you know, I do feel bad that, you know, more people, you know, and I think it, you know, maybe it is just a matter of time. You know, that just, you know, you just keep putting it out there. And that's, you know, kind of what I'm trying to do, you know, somewhat with this podcast, maybe reach a few people and, you know, incorporate it more into my practice, because I really think that this is the best way for me to treat people, you know, these, you know, throwing these drugs. And I think Dr. McDougall said it's much more fun to take people off medication than it is to put them on.
Oh, that's, you know, lovely.
You know, so...
Well, I think it's become so accepted that everybody takes something. You know, whenever you even go to get a massage, they'll always say, and what medications are you on? And if you say none, they think you didn't understand the question. Like, you know, not which ones did you take today, but which ones are you on ongoing? And then the idea of none, that's, you know, what part of none do you not understand? It's just because it's so unusual, especially, you know, when you get to be of a certain age. And I'm 64, and I no more feel 64. I think it's hysterical. Like, I never thought when I was younger that this age would be in this body, feeling like I feel, looking like I look, doing what I'm doing. It's just the best-kept secret. My next book coming in the spring, The Good Karma Diet, has the subtitle, Eat Gently, Feel Amazing, Age in Slow Motion. And anybody listening that maybe doesn't have any health problems, just kind of curious, just for your own ego and vanity, this is the best way to eat there is.
Well, I can't wait till your book comes out. I'll be ready to perhaps even maybe sneak a signed copy at some point. I don't know.
Well, that would be delightful.
When I come to your class, there you go.
Great.
I think it's, you know, it is a well-kept secret. And, you know, the people that have, you know, I have probably more friends that actually have adopted a plant-based lifestyle than patients, perhaps, or patients that have stuck with it. And, you know, we're making grounds, but everybody that does feels well. And, you know, I agree with you. I certainly have. I'm 52. I certainly have more energy than I ever thought. And I can't believe I'm 52. My daughter's 22, and I think I should be the one in college, not her, you know. But, you know, and I was, but you know, I think it's the way to go.
Well, it really is. And I think it is becoming more the norm, because more people, and this is borne out statistically, are eating plant-exclusive meals more of the time. I mean, we've always done it every now and then. I mean, you know, even those of us who grew up way back then, we sometimes had pasta with red sauce, or we had a peanut butter sandwich. I mean, there were times we ate a meal that didn't have animal stuff in it. But certainly, whole foods are much more to the fore. I mean, it's unusual for people who are educated and interested in things to really seek out highly processed junk kind of food. People are waking up in some ways, and we just need to be there and provide information. And it was interesting when you said that you've influenced more friends than patients. I think sometimes we have this idea there are certain people we're supposed to reach, and I get people all the time who will say, I'm just really, really trying to change my dad because my dad's diabetic and my dad has really high cholesterol and he just doesn't want to change. And I know you love your dad, but you may have changed your whole office by now. So just know sometimes you're not going to change the person you want to change most, but just shine your light and be healthy and have energy and look great. And you're going to influence a lot of people, and then they're going to ripple out, and they're going to influence more people. And what's really interesting if your dad or whoever it is that you really, really want to get this message is going to get it, it may have to come from someone who's not so close to him. So just keep getting the word out to others, and maybe it'll cycle back to your dad.
Did your daughter Adair ever go through a rebellious stage, like, I think I want to try something different?
No, she never did, and I was always really open about that because we did quite a few things in her growing up that I guess looking back would now be considered alternative. I mean, we also homeschooled because I was a single mom, and I was a speaker. I mean, I still am a speaker. I speak all over the place, and it was very difficult to be able to travel and do what I did and have her in school. So after preschool and one semester of kindergarten, we started homeschooling. So we did that all the way through, and I was always very clear, you know, if you want to go to school, you know, just tell me. And finally at one point, she was maybe 12 or 13, she said, why is it you're always trying to get rid of me? I said, no, that's not it. That's not it. And the same thing with the vegan. She never, ever wanted to. And even as a little kid, she'd say to me something like if she went to Sunday school with a friend and I'd say, oh, did they give you anything to eat? And she'd say, well, there were crackers, but I didn't eat any because the teacher wouldn't let me read the package. So it's something that she's kept. And, you know, it's so interesting with kids. They go off on their own and they find other things to be different. And there are other values that I have that she has opted to adopt different values. But she has stayed with her veganism. Her husband is vegetarian. And now, in addition to many other things, she's an actor and a stunt performer. She actually is the stunt double for the young Batman on the Fox series Gotham.
Oh, cool.
And she is a licensed wildlife rehabilitator and co-founder of Urban Utopia Wildlife, which is New York City's first rehab center for sick and injured wild mammals. So it's kind of like, okay, what do vegan kids do when they grow up? Really interesting stuff.
That's very cool. Yeah, I actually went back and I listened to your very first podcast
today.
She was
co-host
for there, and then I also heard the interview when you interviewed her about the wildlife, and so that was very cool. So you have a very talented and compassionate daughter. So you must be very, very proud.
Oh, I am. And, you know, it's also good because time goes fast and everybody's getting older. And I feel really grateful to have given her this healthy start because our family history health-wise is not so good. My mom did live to be quite elderly, but the last 10 or 15 years of her life were not good years at all. And most of the family died pretty young, and it was very much diet-related, either the diabetic kind of spectrum or the high cholesterol heart disease spectrum. And with that kind of genetics, knowing that my daughter grew up eating plant foods, largely whole foods, she knows how to prepare these foods, this is how she cooks for her husband and herself, makes me feel really, really good.
Yeah, I think that's just huge. When I look around and see the kids, I've done a couple high school talks, and you know, the food is just atrocious. The obesity in the young kids and the disease in the young kids, and they've been exposed to, you know, not only the animal products, but the tainted animal products that, you know, I just think disease is going to be rampant. We're going to be a very sick society if we don't get a handle on some of this. You know, on the other hand, I think there are a lot of young people that are kind of spreading the word.
Yeah, oh, yeah, I think so, too. I think it's a beautiful movement when you really go to, say, a conference. Like every summer in Johnstown, Pennsylvania, near Pittsburgh, there's Vegetarian Summer Fest in late June or early July. And it's like summer camp for grown-ups and families. And you're there with 400 people and up to 700 people on the weekend, and everybody is committed to eating well, living well, being happy, making a difference. And you just come to see this is growing, and this is great. And one way that I know that this is very much a young movement is women that I know who are over 35 and single vegans, they always say, I meet vegan guys, but they're always younger than me. So, not so positive for the dating scene, maybe, but very positive for the future of the planet and everybody's arteries.
Yeah, I think it's great. I really, really thank you for your time. I'm looking forward. I have a call with John Joseph in a few days, and so.
Oh, great!
Yeah, I heard him interviewed on your show and in Rich Roll, and you know, so that should be a hoot. And you know, he certainly can, you know, get down and dirty with the guys, and you know, make them think a little bit in ways that we probably couldn't reach them. So you know, everybody has their own way and message. So it's
absolutely true. And I think we all need to be grateful for that. This is something I try to tell the students in the academy, because very often people will say, you know, but I'm not a speaker and I don't have a science background and I don't have this and I don't have that. But then when you talk to them, well, what do you have? And everybody has something. So the reason that I called my book and now my whole business Main Street Vegan is I grew up in Kansas City, Missouri, two blocks off Main Street. I get Main Street. And I know about being a regular person. And sometimes we have this idea that, oh, vegans, they're like, you know, movie stars and people with chefs and private jets and trainers 8 days a week and things like that. Well, good for them. But the rest of us are just doing life, and we're doing this on a budget, and we're doing this in the time that we have, and we're doing this with the people who were already in our lives before we ever heard about this, and it really works. So, you know, John Joseph has got the guys, Rich Roll has got the super athletes, Joshua Katcher and Leanne Hilgart have the fashion elite, and, you know, I've got Main Street. Everybody's got something.
Perfect. Well, I think you are a lighthouse, and I love listening to your podcast and eagerly await the next one when it comes out. So I do thank you very, very much for your time. And, you know, we'll get some of your books to have in my office, and we'll go from there.
Thank you so very much. I'm so happy that you reached out, and I'm honored to be part of your program.
Thank you for your time. Well, I hope you enjoyed the interview with Victoria. I certainly did. You can follow her on Twitter at Victoria_Moran. That's Moran. She's also on Facebook, Victoria Moran Author, and she has a YouTube channel, Victoria Moran NYC. So check out her podcast, Main Street Vegan, her book, and look for the upcoming Good Karma book as well. I'd love to hear from you as well. You can reach me at jamiedulaney@gmail.com. It's jamiedulaney at gmail.com. I'd like to hear any questions you'd like me to answer on the show. Certainly a nice iTunes review would be well appreciated. So without further ado, Happy New Year. Be healthy and happy.